Well, the directions I've been given by the president are, I think, very clear-cut. That is to say that we're to continue the policy that's currently in force, that the military units that are in the Gulf region are there to deter further aggression, to defend should deterrence fail, to enforce the sanctions. We are also now, obviously, deploying, as the president mentioned in his statement, sufficient additional force to make certain that, should circumstances warrant, that we will have the capacity to undertake offensive military action as well.
That was then Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney on November the 8th, 1990, delivering the announcement that the United States was going to deploy the U.S. 7th Corps out of Germany, one of which was me. I was listening very intently that day from my house in Bamberg, Germany, along with a bunch of my other friends from the 2nd U.S. Cavalry Squad Regiment. And we were shortly thereafter deployed to Saudi Arabia and then onwards into Kuwait and Iraq. Now, that was Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney at the time. And as you're probably aware now, he passed overnight, and a lot of people have been talking about him all day long. I was actually asked to go on BBC earlier today, this morning, to talk about, you know, his legacy and all that. And I told the BBC when they called me, and because they said, I think the term that they used, we were going to give him a, wanted you to come and kind of laud him and give a reputation, to talk about how good he was, et cetera. And I said, well, I'm not sure that you're looking, that I'm going to be the guy you're looking for, because I don't know that I'm going to be able to give that, because I have a very different view on Dick Cheney. And they said, well, just whatever you want is going to be fine. But I guess most people were lauding him and saying all these great things. But in my estimation, the true legacy of Dick Cheney is going to be something, a significant stain on the reputation and credibility of the United States. And I don't think that he deserves to be lionized and have all kinds of good things said about him. He did a bunch of stuff. I mean, he was a member of Congress, Secretary of Defense, I think on two separate occasions, and of course the Vice President. But it's what he did, especially later in his career, that I think has left a lasting legacy in a negative direction, which I think we're still paying for to this day and may ultimately pay an even deeper price, even though he's already now passed from this earth. And I want to kind of give you a sense of it. So this was from Fox News early today from Sean Hannity, when he was actually giving him the big lionization.
I will tell you this, you know, he bled keeping America free through and through. And it was his passion, and he lived it. He was a serious, you know, a defender of our country and our nation.
Yeah, you know, that brief swell, and certainly a lot of people cast that lot. But he, and some of the detractors, they may say that he on after 9/11 did some things that you know, led into the Iraq War of 2002, the one that started in March of 2002. And they say he misused intelligence, et cetera, to trying to get a war. But I think when you examine the record, it's a lot worse than that, because the impression being that he was just trying to do the right thing. He was trying to defend America and just got overzealous and, you know, played loose and easy with this intelligence. Because that's what he really thought. But there are evidence and troubling pieces of information that maybe make it look like, or maybe give evidence to the fact that this was not just something that happened, but something that he helped orchestrate. Now, even in 9/11, there have been stuff. In fact, Tucker Carlson has just done a whole 5-part series saying, hey, this official government story that we've been told from the beginning is real problematic. The 9/11 Commission report that went on with Lee Hamilton and several others, Tucker has revealed there's some real shortcomings inside of that. And so, and a lot of things they didn't cover, a lot of things they covered inadequately, but some of the other information that was subsequently unearthed later really brought a lot of warning signs and trouble to this whole story that makes it not so clear cut that it was 19 terrorists with Osama bin Laden and all the stuff that we've come to believe. Now, I'm not going to regurgitate a lot of that right now, but I am going to take a look at what Dick Cheney had done and the role that he may have played, because from the very beginning, there were some real problems in the testimony during the 9/11 Commission hearings that relate directly to the vice president. So first of all, this is what he's claiming. This was, I think this was actually done on the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 strikes when Dick Cheney was interviewed, and they asked him for his recollections on how that day started.
It was a normal kind of day, at least it began that way. I got my intelligence brief at home to the vice president's residence about 6:30 in the morning. I was in the in my office by about 8, which was kind of a late start, but the president was out of town that day, so we didn't have our normal early morning meeting. And I was in my office working with my chief speechwriter. My assistant called in from the outer office, and she said that an airplane had just hit the World Trade Center. And so I turned on the television, and of course you could see the smoke. My immediate reaction was to think that it was extraordinarily unusual to have an accident like that on such a day. You know, it hit the World Trade Center, an airliner, not a cloud in the sky, beautiful September morning. And then as we watched, we saw the actual second strike when the second airplane came in.
So according to the vice president, it was just another day. It was just some Tuesday morning, I think, was the day of the week that it was. And then, bam, he just got surprised out of all this and then went in and, you know, started taking action thereafter. But in the testimony, there was a testimony by the then Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta, who was recounting that when he came into the, I guess, the emergency operation room there in the White House, when a lot of the cabinet members were called in, he said that he heard something from the vice president that he said he didn't really understand at the time, but subsequently has come to question about, and especially when he was given this testimony, he was like, it seems like he already knew something. Now, he's going to be talking specifically about some orders that were given, but there's one other thing that was not brought out in this testimony that definitely needs to be brought out now.
No, I was not. I was made aware of it during the time that the airplane coming in to the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out. The plane is 30 miles out. And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
Now, he went on to say there he's not sure what that meant. They are imagining and saying, well, apparently there was some orders that were given at some point to shoot down one of the passenger planes if they got. But see, that even we'll just stick with that for the minute. That actually doesn't line up with what else we know, because the claim that there was orders given and that they were given consideration rather for fighter jets to shoot down one of the airliners, it was the one that eventually crashed in Pennsylvania, not the one that hit the Pentagon. So there was no evidence that I've seen anywhere that there was active consideration to shoot that plane down. But there is a much bigger issue that unfortunately I've not seen raised anywhere and definitely adds more questions to this issue. And one of the reasons why I'm in complete support of Tucker Carlson's claim and argument that we need a new independent investigation into all the things that happened about 9/11. We deserve to know the truth. And I think that Dick Cheney plays a very central role in that. And this testimony right here is evidence of it. Now, you just heard Vice President Cheney himself say, I didn't know anything about it. It was just a regular day. I was at home getting my briefing, and then I see these accidents, and bam, and all of a sudden everything goes into action after that. But yet, apparently not long after that. Now, remember, when the plane first hit, when the towers fell, and when the other plane hit the Pentagon and crashed in Pennsylvania, it was a relatively short time, just a matter of, an hour and a half or something like that. Not much time passed at all. So from the time that he's claiming that he was at his house getting his briefing and saw on TV these accidents until he was in the situation room hearing that information and giving that kind of orders, it's a very, very short time period. So how is it then that the vice president had a countdown of someone saying an airplane was heading to the Pentagon because they, Norman Mineta there specified they were talking about the plane that was going to, that would eventually hit the Pentagon. How would you have known what the target was? Because up to that point, nobody knew anything. All they knew is that two planes had hit the Twin Towers and that there were two other planes in the air. Now, some speculated one was heading to the White House, et cetera. But before that, when there were still two, no one had any idea where either of them were heading. And for him to give such detailed, for that person who was talking to the vice president to give him such detail, that means somebody knew precisely where that plane was heading. And at least 50 miles out, and they're given a countdown to that. And that apparently some orders had been given. We don't know what those orders were. We never did find out. Mineta never said. He never found out himself, and apparently no one thought to ask. So Dick Cheney never answered the question either, at least in any examination that I've ever seen. But it certainly seemed like he had much more than certain foreknowledge that he, within minutes, is going to have known for sure where a plane was heading, got somebody that's given it a countdown, and it's talking about something that had already given some sort of orders. One might reasonably ask, what were those orders and how did you know where that plane was going to go in so that you could give it such a precise countdown? Those questions weren't answered. I'd like to have them answered. Now, you can say, well, that's just, you know, I mean, they knew it was coming to Washington or they suspected it was. And so, I don't know, maybe they figured it was, the Pentagon was a reasonable target. So let's go ahead and put that. And as it's closed in, they had to give it a target to something. Theoretically, I suppose that's possible, but that's not the end of the trail. So I'm going to show you something here from that was from talking about General Wes Clark. And let's see if I can get the right. Yeah, this is the one right here. So here we have General Clark, and I forget which year this was made. It was obviously quite a while ago. But he was talking about what happened, something that happened about 10 days after 9/11. So recognizing it right away, you know, there's all the issues about how do we immediately know, like within hours, it was Osama bin Laden when the buildings were still, before Building 7 infamously even fell, that before that, we already were saying, yo, bin Laden, bin Laden, bin Laden. So everyone's focused on bin Laden, and that ends up going to focusing on Afghanistan, et cetera. But how come 10 days later, this happens?
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, No. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail."
Yep, and that's something that we're going to see a lot of over the years after that. Every problem looks like a nail when you have this great hammer or one you perceive to be a great hammer. But check again the dates there. That was the 10th. The 10th of September, or 10 days after, so still in September. We don't even go into Iraq, into Afghanistan until the 7th of October. So far, everything in the public is focused on Afghanistan, the Taliban, and their support for Osama bin Laden and all of that. So before we've even gone into, so you're talking like more than 2 weeks before we go into Afghanistan, there he's at the Pentagon and they're talking actively about Iraq. And you heard him say there, what was the connection? Did somebody say something about Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden? He says, well, no, they didn't, according to what he said there. But as it turns out, I also had some information because when I was in Afghanistan in 2011, I became friends with one of the senior interrogators that we had, a civilian that was assigned at the time, and somebody that had been there for many, many years. He was not like, you know, the military folks who rolled in and out after a year and went somewhere else. He had been there for most of the time since 9/11. And for the time we went there, it's when Bagram was something that we started. So he was, I think, one of the very first interrogators we had on the ground there. And so he was interrogating lots of people. But before that, even, he was an interrogator elsewhere. And he said that he was on the ground in the place where one of the first guys that was captured and I think, I can't remember the name of the guy that was captured. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting to write off the TAM, but he was part of the interrogation team that got the guy who was, I think it was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And he said that Cheney came to the location and said, has he said anything about connecting this to Osama bin Laden? I'm sorry, to Saddam Hussein. And again, this is days after 9/11. And he said, you mean Osama bin Laden? He says, no, Saddam Hussein. And he says, no, there's no connection whatsoever. I mean, this is just, you know, the 9/11 stuff with Osama bin Laden group. He goes, yeah, pressure him more. Find out if there's anything at all about Saddam Hussein. So you can either argue, one, that he's trying to create something and looking for anything at all to try and tie this. And by the way, this friend of mine, this colleague, said that the vice president was really kind of putting pressure on him to know, really, let me know if you find anything, kind of implying that I want you to find something. He didn't. And he said the vice president was very displeased and was frustrated, ended up leaving. But why would he be looking for something with Saddam Hussein? Why would there be an attempt to, days after that the Pentagon already, by the 10th day afterwards, already was in the process of planning for a war against Iraq, not Al-Qaeda, not the Taliban, though those were simultaneously going on. They were already looking beyond that. And as you heard him say that they were going to, or as he continued on rather in that same clip there, General Clark, he said, and then after they finished with Iraq, they were going to go into some others. As a matter of fact, let me, I think I still have that up handy here. Let's let you continue to see that because there's more to it.
So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that. He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, today. And he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. I said, is it classified? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. And I saw him a year or so ago, and I said,
that's the bottom line there. He goes in and talks about that. Yes, there was a plan. They wanted to go after all these different countries. And you may recall that in January of 2002, so after we had started the war in Afghanistan, and then before we'd started the war in Iraq, President Bush, out of nowhere, has this axis of evil, Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. And so he adds, Iran wasn't even on the radar. In fact, Iran was actually helping us out, according to information that I have received. They were actually trying to help us out and be cooperative because they didn't like the Taliban. They were of a different sect of Islam, so they were actually willing to help us out with that. And then all of a sudden, we turned them into the axis of evil. Like, we want to put them on the radar too. And you heard the general there. He actually said that there was a plan that we wanted to go after all those countries. And all of this seems to go back, if not the originator, but certainly somebody who seemed to be very, very tightly coordinated, was Vice President Dick Cheney. And then you may also recall, so that was in January of 2002 when George Bush made the axis of evil speech. Well, that's, you know, they continued to build the war drums up for war against Iraq. And then you may recall one of the famous speeches that Dick Cheney gave was that in 2002, later in 2002, so the war's not going to happen until March of 2003, but by August of 2002, Dick Cheney goes public with intelligence.
Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use them against our friends, against our allies, and against us. And there is no doubt that his aggressive regional ambitions will lead him into future confrontations with his neighbors, confrontations that will involve both the weapons that he has today and the ones he will continue to develop with his oil wealth.
And you see his confidence there when he made those statements. There is no doubt, he kept repeating over and over. There is no doubt. No, there was plenty of doubt. As a matter of fact, I guess if you really want to get technical about it, there was no doubt that he didn't and that he wasn't. But that was not of concern to the vice president or to the Secretary of Defense or Paul Wolfowitz or any number of other people, maybe George Bush as well. It's still an open question whether Bush and all these guys conspired to take care to do these actions and to launch these wars, or whether they, maybe a smaller group, decided to do this and then they just brought these others along and convinced them of these things. They certainly did that to the American public. I was definitely one of them, because at the time, because of watching what Dick Cheney had done in Desert Storm as a second lieutenant, so I was very new in the Army. From what I could see there, he was a strong leader and decisive. And George Bush, 41, was a decisive leader. And, you know, and I just bought hook, line, and sinker. This is something we had to do, that they were a threat to the whole region and our way of life by potentially going to Saudi Arabia and shutting off the oil for even for America, et cetera. I bought into it. And I was in the Pentagon in 2002. And in 2003, when these wars were going off, and I remember, Colin Powell's famous, speech before the UN when he held up that vial of substance and said that, you know, this is enough chemical weapon to kill all these people or do all these bad things, et cetera. And, you know, showed all the intercepts, et cetera, all the things that Cheney had been talking about. And then you had Colin Powell validating there. And of course, Colin Powell was had the highest reputation. So I believe Tim, I believe the vice president. When he said those, I remember that speech. I remember it, that one from August in 2002. And I said, of course it's going to be true. I mean, I had access to classified information at the time. And we were actually compiling, while I was in the Pentagon, we were compiling what was called sensitive site exploitation teams. And we were getting these teams of qualified people. I remember in the months leading up to the war, when it was clear that a decision had been made and we were waiting on the launch date, we were having all these people, we were resourcing them, we were getting them together, we were getting the qualified people, because he said, man, we got to go in there. And we, as soon as the opportunity, we've got to seize these weapons and we've got to get control of them so they don't, get into the hands of nefarious people, so they don't get used. I mean, we really have to control them. I believed all of it because I was on the inside. We certainly weren't lying to each other. And as far as all of us knew, this was 100% true and accurate. And naturally, everybody outside believed, because Dick Cheney had been a member of Congress. I'd been Secretary of Defense. He'd led the victorious Desert Storm. And now here he was, Vice President of the United States. And just, that very calm demeanor that you saw there, but very emphatic, et cetera. So everybody believed everything you said, hook, line, and sinker. And it wasn't until later on, all of a sudden, things start falling apart. And I'll never forget that, there was many in the media and many in the Democrats at the time were saying, let's don't go into Desert Storm. Into Iraq in 2003. It's a mistake. And many of our allies were against it. I remember thinking, man, y'all are all just... Y'all are all weak, man. You don't understand what's at stake here. These things are right. What President Bush is saying, what Dick Cheney is saying, what Rumsfeld are saying, these guys are trying to keep us safe, man. They're doing everything to keep us safe, and y'all are letting this crazy man who's going to use these weapons of mass destruction, if we don't get a hold of them right now. I bought it. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. I'm not going to pretend like back then I had all the right answers. I didn't, because I trusted them. I trusted our leaders. And that turned out to be a mistake. And I'll never forget when the days turned into weeks and we still hadn't found any information here. And like I said, these sensitive site exploitation teams that we'd sent in there, now then, we, as soon as they got on the ground there, we started getting reports set up and we start getting briefings set up for the Secretary of the Army and the Chief of Staff of the Army and the other senior leaders that came in twice a day for briefings. And, you know, like, okay, well, let us know as soon as we do. All right, well, we don't have any so far, but here's where they are, here's where they're going in, and here's what they're checking, et cetera. But pretty soon we're going to have it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it takes a little while. I mean, they were trying to hide it, but then all of a sudden it starts going into even longer. And now then weeks, plural, start passing and they're not finding anything. And I remember thinking, oh, snap, man, if we don't find this, we are going to be the pariahs of the world. And the administration here is just going to be excoriated when they find out that there were no weapons of mass destruction. If there were none, and that we literally invaded a country and killed all these people and deposed their government, and the justification was wrong. I mean, it's going to be a horrible day. Everybody's going to be against us. And as we know, that's not how it turned out. Let's see, what was it? Senator John McCain. He went on one of the Sunday talk shows. I can't remember which month it was, but it was several months after it became clear that there were no weapons of mass destruction. And they finally just point blank asked him, dude, seriously, there's no weapons of mass destruction. So what do you say? Because you supported all this. And he says, yeah, turns out there wasn't. But, you know, he was a bad guy. He deserved to be killed anyway. He deserved to be heaven taken over. So it's fine. And I mean, I was just slack jawed. I just couldn't believe he had just said that and that everyone accepted it. But everyone did, even the political opponents, everyone just was okay with it. And to this day, I still don't understand why that was okay. Why people were okay with a complete fraudulent justification to invade another country, to destroy their army, and to eventually kill or execute their leader. And everybody was fine with it. I don't know, but that's what happened. So that started a process. And in my view, the real enduring bad legacy of Dick Cheney is that he normalized the issue of regime change wars, of using military power because we can. And whether it was in Afghanistan, whether it was in Iraq, whether it was later on in Libya or in Somalia, or any of these other places in Syria. And then now then to these days here, because look, we went into war in Afghanistan and then we just left, accomplished nothing. Taliban were there when we came in. Taliban are there to this day. They were there when we left. 20 years of disaster. And instead of recognizing we'd made this horrible mistake and let's vow never to do it again, people just shrug their shoulders and say, well, we shouldn't have left at all. David Petraeus among those. He said, we should have never have left. It was a mistake. We should be there today. My former commander, H.R. McMaster, the former national security advisor for President Trump in his first term. Yeah, we shouldn't have left. It was a mistake. Like that should be a permanent condition there. I just don't understand that. And then now then Iraq. Other than a very short period of time when we left in, I think it was 2011, and then ISIS came in 2014, and instead of saying, that's y'all figured out, that's your deal, y'all helped create that situation with the government that was in Iraq, instead we bailed them back in and sent the U.S. military, and we're still there to this day. Nobody ever wants to leave anywhere. It's like, no, once we go somewhere, we have to stay. So they claim it was a mistake to have left Afghanistan, and they resist leaving Iraq. They resist leaving Syria. Trump tried three times to leave in his first term and was talked out of it every time. Biden never even attempted. Trump apparently reduced some of the folks that we have there now, but they're still there to this day. We just never want to leave anywhere that's going on. And of course, now, what are we doing? Now then, we're talking about there are military forces building in the region. And potentially Trump has signaled that we may go and have a regime change in Venezuela. Lindsey Graham is the biggest cheerleader for that. Absolutely, definitely wants to do that. He should go. Several other senators are as well. That's the legacy. The elite in our foreign policy world right now, military circles, they're all about regime change. They never met a regime change they didn't like. And so now then we're even talking about maybe going into Mexico and having military operations there, maybe in Colombia as well. It's where does this ever stop? And of course, we've already gone into Iran, may go back there again. That's hardly resolved. So that's that situation's still on the table because no negotiation has been done with Iran. They still haven't agreed to give up their nuclear weapons. We claim it was destroyed then. And I think most people know it wasn't. It was damaged, but it was not destroyed, and it could come back at any time. And we are, you know, I think there's going to be an issue to go back there. And so you see that we haven't gotten rid of that. The people didn't like it. The American people didn't like it. That's one of the reasons I think that President Trump was elected in both 2016 and in 2024, because people were tired of war. He ran on a platform, no more stupid wars. We don't want any more regime change wars. You remember that? Where is that guy? Because now then, he's the one who's leading all the drums. Now, he claims with one hand that, yeah, you know what, I'm the peacemaking president. I want the Nobel Peace Prize, and I've stopped 8 wars. Meanwhile, we're threatening all these other countries right here, and it's hardly legitimate to be claiming that he ended all these other wars. He made some phone calls and had a few meetings with some of these, but that is far, far from resolving conflicts that have been going on for 30 years or whatever he's claiming. Many of them are still tentative and tense right now. Some of them, like the Pakistan-Indian situation, India says, what are you talking about? You had nothing to do with this. This is just between our two countries here. So the bottom line is you want to use the current administration wants to use the language of peace, but it's taking all these actions and, you know, and killing people in these boats in the Caribbean, et cetera. I mean, we may go into Venezuela, but we are killing people extrajudicially with no justification, no legal basis internationally or nationally. And I think this goes back to Dick Cheney. This is the legacy he has bequeathed to us, that it's okay to use military power to compel compliance with whoever you want, whether they did anything or not. If you don't like them, you can just kill them and just claim whatever. And no matter how paucity the evidence is or how thin the justification, you just say whatever you want. And if people complain about it later on, you can just ignore it or just say, whatever. But that's what happens, and they'll end up doing what they want to do. And Obama did it. Biden did it to a smaller degree, but he still did it. And now Trump has done it. And, you know, at some point, you just got to admit the reality. Because of where we've been, the rule of law in terms of war and peace no longer exists. It doesn't. The Constitution, the 1973 War Powers Act, were designed expressly to prevent this. And now that it's become so commonplace, and Lindsey Graham bragged about how 130 times it's already been violated since 1973. So what's in the 131st? And that's accepted by all sides of the elite. And of course, they think that they can control all this stuff. But the problem is, at some point, you violate the law enough, then no law is effective to you. You're not limited by anything. It's only a matter of what you can do, what you can politically get away with, not whether it's actually legal or illegal. You know, this whole mockery of an idea that no one is above the law, that's a great in principle. It doesn't exist in reality. You can definitely, there are definitely people that are above the law, a bunch of them, very powerful people, very rich people. That's just the truth of it, folks. And it's not all Dick Cheney's fault, really. A lot of stuff existed before that, and much more has been done since that stuff. But he's kind of a pivot point in here that really kind of just sent it up to a much higher level. And we've just built on it ever since then. And I fear that one day that mendacity, that unwillingness to abide by any kind of law, and this malleable morals that are only useful as far as I can get what I want, and I'll just violate them left and right when it doesn't, that will eventually come back to haunt us. It's just inevitable. I believe that God is in control of all this, and that God is a God of justice. And even though he takes a lot longer to wreak justice than most people would like on the planet Earth, certainly me, eventually he does bring recompense. Some on the other side. I suspect that Dick Cheney may be discovering that right now. But for others, it's on this side. And it's only a matter of time before you go so far down the path of just forget about the rule of law. And at some point, it's going to come back to haunt us. And it'll we'll all have to pay a price for that one when it happens. That's the truth of it, folks. So when you hear folks saying today that, yeah, let's lionize Dick Cheney and he was a great American and all this, there's more to the story than what they'll be telling you about it. That's what I wanted to make sure that everybody knew today. Thanks very much, folks. Appreciate your time today. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.